This is mostly about high-intensity science on free electron lasers. It's a little bit different than what you've been seeing, although I'm happy that I follow Christoph's talk and you at least saw something blowing up. Now you're going to see it in spades. So basically high-intensity science, because you probably don't know what that is interesting because it occurs widely, and there's two regimes. This is a phase diagram for hydrogen, and there's all these regimes colored in. Hot dense matter essentially is above 100 eV, and it's everything from Rote track for the sun, spherical compressions for ICF, inertial confinement fusion with huge lasers, radiatively heated foils, which are done on very large lasers. And then there's a somewhat more interesting regime, which is called warm dense matter, which essentially are solids that you warm up, but you want them to be solid when you study them. So you're trying to defy what nature wants to do. And you find this in planetary cores of large planets, planar shocks. And anything that starts out as a solid and ends up in a plasma has to go through this regime. And it's also very important for X-ray-driven inertial fusion because you want to keep it on a low adiabat, so you want to keep it solid and warmed as you drive it inward to allegedly get fusion energy in the lab. We're currently building an end station. It's the furthest back end station. The sixth one, called the MEC end station. This is a picture of the working bits of it. There's, of course, the LCLS beam comes into it. There's a short pulse laser, which is 150 millijoule short pulse optical laser. There's also a long pulse laser, which is this green line which comes down, which is essentially 50 joules in a long pulse. And that will create shocks and make hot dense matter. And we've kitted it out with the idea that single investigators can actually show up without large numbers of people and do very complex experiments. And that's why these instruments like the VISAR and the FDI are there. These are actually very labor-intensive to set up, and so they'll actually be there all the time for people who want to use them. They're both ways to measure surface motion. This is a Fourier domain interferometer, and this is a velocity interferometer for any reflector. So with that, a velocity interferometer system for any reflector. Now, are you illuminated by that? Now you want to know, why do you want one of those? That's a better question. So anyway, So there's a full, high intensity science covers a lot of phase space, and I broke it up into warm dense matter types of experiments and hot dense matter experiments, but there's also diagnostic development. And I think, Stefan Hauriga, you're going to talk about the Thompson scattering experiments? Some of them. Okay, so he'll actually talk about the development of Thompson scattering experiments. But essentially, what you're trying to do in the warm dense matter regime is make warm dense matter in a way that you can study it. It's very, very easy to make. It's very, very hard to study because you have to isolate this thing that wants to blow apart. The hot dense matter regime, you use a big laser usually, and then you're going to use the FEL as a probe and a pump on the system you want. So let me cover warm dense matter. The simplest experiment, or the first thing that comes to mind, is you just take the FEL beam, focus it down to 10 microns, pass it through aluminum, and if you made the aluminum essentially one E-folding in width, what will happen is you will isochorically heat at solid density, you'll heat the system. Of course, there's going to be a gradient through this. I'll show you that in a second. But you're sampling a part of phase space that's very hard to get to. So it stays solid. This is done within 100 femtoseconds. And then importantly, what will happen if you actually make it uniform, which we hope we will be able to do, when it releases, it will release along an isentrope. So you can actually map out the equation of state of this system. Now there's lots of questions. Saying that is the same as saying we're going to do single molecular imaging. But along the way, we'll get lots of information. You can then make samples, for example, that are foams. These are these aerated samples, which reach higher temperatures, but then they release across a different part of, so it releases along a different isentrope. The answer is, to the question, why do you want to do this, is there is no data there. The only data that exists is on the shock, on the principal Hugonio. There's a little bit other data, but very little. And that just means you whack the target, it gets up to a particular pressure, you measure its state because of the Hugonio relations, and so there's one little line through this space that's measured. Everything else is unknown. And if you look at different theories in those spaces, which I won't show you, you would actually find that they don't agree except along the point where there's data. In other words, the theorists know how to get the right answer once they're giving them. So the first, the theorists, which are you people. So given data, you can do real well. Well, anyway, the first thing we ever did on an FEL was at FLASH, and we did a warm dense matter sample. And we did the simplest experiment we could think of, which basically is you just took the FEL at 92 eV, with somewhere between 10 to 25 femtosecond pulse, 10 to the 12 photons, focus it down onto the sample, which was a simple aluminum sample, and then measure the transmitted energy. That was the point of the experiment, just to see if we knew what was going on. It's very hard to make this mirror have the right quality. That was a problem. But once we did that, then you can move it. Once you make tight focus, you can move it in and out of the focal spot to vary the intensity. What we found was that you can actually, this is the transmission data versus intensity, and you actually can saturate the transmission in aluminum. And the reason that happens is there was 52 nanometers of aluminum foil. Anyway, and the best focus turned out to be a little above 10 to the 16. It happened because the pulse was so short. The pulse is sufficiently short that it beats the Auger times for this system, which is aluminum, which turned out to be about 40 femtoseconds. So you can actually get rid of everything in the spectral range, in the absorption that you're doing, and you saturate the system. And there's a Nature Physics article on that by Bob Nagler, which was published. A very small fraction, when you do this, at least in low intensity, a very small fraction of the kinetic processes is fluorescence. But even though it's a small fraction, you can actually measure it. And these are three different experiments at three different intensities. And you can see that you get the fluorescence curve, which actually tells you the temperature. So we can actually measure the temperature of this thing, which is being heated, on short time scales. And so the temperatures broadly agree. There's a great deal of work, more work, that's been done to understand this in much better detail. But fundamentally, it means we've made warm, dense matter. And critically important, which we didn't know we were going to do, you can ignore most of the words. If we didn't have saturation, this at the end of 15 femtoseconds, this would be the gradient through the system in temperature. It's hot at the front, it's cold at the back. Not good, because now you have to figure out what's what when you do it, when you analyze the data. If you can saturate, that means at the end of 15 femtoseconds, you have a uniform sample. If you have a uniform sample in density and temperature, it will expand isentropically. You can measure the equation of state of this system at that point. So that was a bonus that we found. So what about the other type of high pressure states, which let me first start with shocks. This is what we do now, or what is done now to get very high pressure shocks. You take a very big laser-ish, very big, and you irradiate a single crystal. A sample that's a single crystal. You then make a backlight by taking a very large part of the energy of the laser, which is hundreds to thousands of joules. You irradiate a sample which now diverges. It's very intense, but it has large divergence. And then what you do is you map out on image plates, essentially, all the Bragg, these arcs. Now, that works very well for single crystals, and there's been lots of work done. Justin Wark, are you going to talk about that, Justin? So Justin Wark will talk about that. However, most materials are not single crystals, hard to get. Most materials are polycrystalline. So what happens there, if you get a polycrystalline sample and you do this, the confusion between the grains at all different orientations and the divergence of the X-ray source means you'd have an unfathomable pattern. The LCLS has microradiant divergence, so it's a very narrow beam. The crystal's polycrystalline, oriented different directions. You take a laser, you shock the polycrystalline sample, you bring the LCLS to probe it, and you'll actually get maps like you would over here, but of course these are of all the grains. So you can get very, very good data, which has never been possible before at very high intensities. And indeed, the first planned LCLX shock experiment will use polycrystalline data. This is just an image of a simulation done by Kadao of a sample, and basically analyzing this. This is before the shock, that's after the shock. You get the unshocked and shocked value, unshocked images in the diffuse scattering. So you can actually start considering doing experiments of polycrystalline samples, which are very, very difficult to do now, to say the least. But if you want to do high pressure states, if I make it hot, like I said, get hot, gets to 10 eV or so, and it's sitting there and it's at solid density, you can work it out yourself, it's at high pressure. So the first experiment we're going to do for this is that we make an initial condition, we take a silver sample, this is a sample of silver, and this is 0.8 microns, it's a half of a absorption length, and we use 4,500 EV. And what you see is the front of the sample gets to 18 EV, the back of the sample is at 10 EV, the pressure is 10 megabars, which is a substantial pressure, by the way, if you don't know these things, and the back of the sample is at 5 megabars, just because of attenuation through the sample, and then eventually it evolves. You can see. What we'll do is we'll watch the expansion of both the front and back surfaces using Fourier domain interferometry, just to make sure, with the same spirit as the aluminum experiment, just to make sure we know what's going on. The Fourier domain interferometer, the first thing, is basically a very short pulse, 35 femtosecond pulse, and it looks at the reflections from the target, the interferent into a spectrometer. It has 4 angstroms resolution on where it bounces, where it reflects as it moves. And so that box is the 35 femtoseconds box, and it's 4 angstroms in height. So if you look, you take 3 different equations of state when you run a simulation of this. You dump the energy in and you watch it expand. The equation of state is essential to have this work. And you take 3 different equations of state, all are considered valid, and they give 3 different answers for the critical density surface. That's the that's the point in the expansion where you get where the laser will not propagate anymore. The probe laser will not propagate anymore, and it will reflect. So what happens is you get these 3 curves. The difference curves is this. And as you can see, these are very large compared to the errors. So the experiment does two things. It will validate that we do understand exactly what goes on with the beam, heating a simple solid, front and back. And it also will provide some information on the equations of state in the front and back of the surfaces. So what's planned next will be shocks and create high pressure. And the next set of experiments, the proposed experiments, are to do things where we take experiments that have been done before, and now we're going to try to probe them in situ. As you can imagine, warm dense matter is an attractive thing to do if you have a short pulse laser, because you only have to warm it up. And people have published many papers on this saying it's uniform because they shine a short pulse laser on, the electrons scatter and make it uniform front and back. And the idea would be to test that. So the first thing we're going to do, there's a number of them, is to look at diffuse scattering. And basically what you do, this is just a simulation of what we should see by Ogitsu at Livermore. So you take a short pulse laser, you heat it up, then you use the LCLS beam to do diffuse scattering. You measure G of R. This is I of omega, I of Q is the diffuse scattering. And you then get G of R here as a function of time. And the importance of that is, as a function of time, is it tells you about the thermalization, ion, ion, and ion electron, which is very important to know about. So that's an experiment that's proposed. Similar experiment with similar condition, similar idea, but now the probe is just absorption spectroscopy. That's all you're doing is near-edge spectroscopy. And this experiment, you measure I0 and I with this interferometer, with this setup here on the same shot. And what happens is you heat it up with a short pulse laser. You then use I0 and I, you measure it at the same time on the sample as a function of time. And what you'll actually get is the unoccupied states produced in the warm dense matter as T becomes well-defined, we hope. It becomes well-defined. And that also gives us information, again, on the electron-ion thermalization. Somewhat more exotic is soon, LCLS will be able to propagate both the first and the second harmonic with a ratio of 10 to 1, which isn't bad. What happens, the idea here is you propagate the beam in, it hits a foil, which is the sample. The red curve, which is the fundamental, is absorbed and reflected, and you get backscatter at I0, at time 0. The blue, which is 2 omega, lambda over 2, passes through the sample, bounces off a mirror, which will be a Bragg mirror, and comes back, okay? And when it comes back, you'll get scattering powder, you'll get a powder peaks from the lambda over 2. This timing is set by this distance. So you have very accurate timing by moving this distance. And what you'll get is, from the two rings, you'll be able to see how the system responded by looking at the diffuse scattering. There's impressive numbers. The time is from 5 femtoseconds to 10 picoseconds by moving this, the delay times between the two. And it looks like the jitter is only about 3 femtoseconds. So you'll actually have a map on, you know, a time integrated, you know, step-by-step basis of how the sample heats up and becomes disordered. There's another experiment that's going to be done, which is to measure the full S of K and omega using carbon. And so the idea is to get it for 6 different angles. And what will happen is you'll map out S of K and omega to get a curve, which you get the S of K curve, which has been predicted and sometimes measured. And you heat it up again with an optical laser, a short pulse laser, and then you're going to watch it as it evolves at many angles. So this has been proposed, this is by Gianluca and the team that's up there. Now, as a former spectroscopist, so in the hot dense matter regime, you saw Linda talk about, you know, atoms. Well, basically, we want to do this on plasmas, hot and dense plasmas. So the way to do that is you irradiate a sample which has a little dot of aluminum embedded in it. After you do that, at about 100 picoseconds later, these experiments are done, this part of it's done, and is that the CH, this plastic layer, will actually constrain the aluminum expansion transverse to the surface, and so you get a sample aluminum expanded, which is only changing in one direction. Across it is very small. Anyway, across there's very little variation in the direction parallel to the surface. And then what you do is, this has been observed. Now, with the LCLS, for the first time ever, we can actually pump resonantly on a chosen transition. So, for reasons that are not clear to me right now, but I think I could tell you why, we chose to pump the helium-like 1-3 line. And what you see is, this is the calculation, this is what it looked like before the pump, and this is orders of magnitude. As you can see, it's energy, the spectrum versus the emission. And then immediately after the pump, you get the black line. What that means is you're going to create a state which is at the wrong temperature. So all of a sudden, all the population is moved. It is not dictated by the local temperature. It's dictated by the pump, which you know. You measure the absorption, you'll know how much energy you deposited. You can measure this point, and then it relaxes, and that's the point. You then observe that impulsive change, and the change occurs on the time scale of the collision rates in the system. And it's that set of kinetic processes which is very, very hard to get a handle on. I won't show it to you, but there's a series of non-LTE population kinetic workshops which have gone on now 15 years, and the amount of data of any quality is 2 or 3 data points we have where mean ionization stage has been measured. This will be the first measurement that will actually put quantitative data on the table to allow these people to do kinetics modeling. And once you give them the answer, the theorists can get it right. That's the right. So these are now some ideas that are unproposed, meaning these are ideas that should be proposed. And the first thing is, let's say we took a laser and we shocked something. Well, we're not going to be too careful about it. We don't want a planar. We want to make a little bubble, so that you're pushing real hard at the back with a laser-driven shock. You then take a laser plasma source and then you backlight this thing, like an absorption source, and you look at basically a shadowgram of the sample. This is turned around, but basically you pushed out the aluminum into the CH, and you see the shock front, and you also see the aluminum interface. So basically, the thing that's never been done, which is an interesting thing, is actually image a shock front. You actually resolve it from where the shock impinges to where it's the original material. It's never been done, and that's because it's hard to do. And this just shows a process where if you use phase contrast image, not just absorption, you actually can get very good data. And right now, people have done this and get 5 microns resolution, which is not enough. And plus, these backlights are very long in duration, so consequently, you get smearing from time. So obviously, you take the LCLS, now you have to, LCLS has microradians divergence, so that's not so good. So what you have to do is you have to make it come to a focus and then expand again, so you get an expanding beam, come past the laser-driven shock. The important point is the data will be from the time scale of the data, The measurement is from 10 femtoseconds, which the LCLS can do, to 100. And you actually have a maximum resolution of about, or the best resolution of about 0.1 micron. And that requires a complex detector, which we think the coherent X-ray imaging people will loan us if we're nice to them. And basically, if you look at this data, this is just simulations done by Damian Hicks. So if you look down here, it's very important. We only use 10 to the 8 photons. So the beauty of this is, once you get to do this, you could actually use the LCLS to create the high pressure state, and then a very small fraction of the LCLS to image what the expansion was in real time by doing a split and delay. So it's very efficient, of course. That's nice. Now this speaks, going back to spectroscopy, if you made warm dense matter, could you probe it? What the temperature was by just using this hollow ion idea, which is obvious, it's the first thing you think of. 5 minutes left, you didn't wave at me. You said you would wave. So basically, if I took a piece of warm dense matter, this is probably aluminum, it's solid density, 1.85 kilovolts, and I used 510 to the 10 photons, so it's 1/100th of what we have. And basically, you get a different signal. This is L vacancies we're actually looking at, I think. It can't be K. But anyway, 1.8. Anyhow, you get a different signal depending on what the ambient temperature is, because there's different ionization in the system. Now, how good is that? Well, it goes on for 100 femtoseconds, let's say, and you start at zero, you pump, and this is what you'd see. As long as the pump's on, and this is an actual simulation, as long as the pump's on it from 20 to 100 femtoseconds, you get the same exact curve. So it just sits there. The minute you turn the pump off, or 20 femtoseconds afterward, it drops down a couple of orders of magnitude. So the signal, this signal you'll see, it actually is when the pump is on. So you delay it sometime, and you can watch the temperature evolution in the system just by looking, not just, by looking at these inner shell states being refilled. So it seems like a very interesting idea. And now, the obvious. We'll be able to do split and delay, we are told, soon. When you do split and delay, what it means is you take the FEL beam, and you don't want to delay it, you just want to split it. You come in from both sides. The uniformity, you can make it within a couple of percent, but there's, you know, 500 angstroms of aluminum, and that's what the energy deposition it looks like. And this is two different spot sizes, you know, irradiating two different spot sizes with the LCLS. And you get, if it's very big spots, well, 140 microns, you get temperatures of 1 EV or so, which is fine. That's hard to do. And the density is very, very uniform. And this is 100 femtoseconds after the pulse. Notice TE is not equal to TI, because the pulse just went off. That's a big deal. You want to know how fast they thermalize. If you did it for 30 microns, you actually get up to 10 EV. So actually, we have a very efficient way to make very uniform systems. The density is the same. The temperature is the same. Temperatures are the same. But until they thermalize, the electrons and the ions thermalize, it's still not an LTE system. So there's a big issue about the thermalization. Also, if you made this sample uniform, you roll up an EBIT, you select out a bunch. You could get single ion bunches, or you could take, you know, three, you know, because it's highly spiked. You pass that bunch through the uniform sample, and you will have the first ever stopping power experiment done on a warm dense matter system that's uniform. And people have been trying to do this for decades, and the data is just not worth publishing, although they do publish. You know, we all do that, right? you publish the hard work. And this is just talks about, this is a simple AMO type experiment. We do the same thing, which I've already showed you. I've shown you this, I should have cut this out. And the very last thing I'll end on is this. You now have an X-ray laser. This laser is a laser. So what you could do is you could look at the redistribution function. That means I can probe, I can pump somewhere in a spectral line and watch the emission and watch how the emission changes as a function of where I pump through this line. It's called the redistribution function, and it's really interesting for astrophysical stuff, but it's theoretically very interesting to try to do this. And this is a calculation we did on iron, lithium-like iron 2-4. This is the laser pump energy, this is the FEL pump energy, and that's the spectrum you'd see. So as you start pumping through the line, you get these changes. The importance of this is that if you get good with 10 femtosecond pulses, you can actually start measuring the fluctuation rates in the system of a plasma for the first time ever. So you'll see what the ion correlation times are, because they're relatively slow. And if you got even better, you might be able to see what the electron correlations are. But I think we'd need out of seconds for that. And basically, the bandwidth's easy to do, and you just need to get somebody brave enough to try this experiment. And that's the end. Thank you. Did I end on time? Am I a good boy?
So, questions? Yes?
Oh, Beata, your question, that's a novel idea.
I wonder about this experiment that you were telling about, number 5, access to the direct access to the structure factor.
Yeah.
As a function of time. Is it just information also separately about electronic, ionic structure, so, or is it just already in the equilibrium? So what's the...
The angle, okay, so the range of angles is such that you will look at both the electron feature and the Rayleigh feature. Okay?
Okay. But this is dynamic, so it means it also gives information how the system evolves.
Yes. Okay. So it will be done for all angles and then all the range of times.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh.
On your shadow imaging, I just sort of mentioned that we did an experiment at Flash where we lithographed an array of zone plates, and then we zapped them and destroyed them one by one, but the beam passed through them and onto a sample, and we got a shadow image. Stefano Marchesini has the results of that, which have not been published. That's one thing you could... Well, I was going to ask you, what kind of lens are you going to use? I mean, that won't be destroyed by the beam. So you can have destructible array of zone plates. That's one idea to get a shadow image. The other point was in your powder patterns, just a suggestion, if you can find crystals with symmetry lower than orthorhombic, then there's no overlap of lines. Every ring is a different structure factor if the symmetry of the crystal is low enough.
Oh, that's interesting. Give me the mic and I'll ask myself a question. That's not bad. Two questions, that's more than usual. Or actually a comment and a question.
Okay. Give you the zone place.
Give you the zone place, yeah. An offer. Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Dick, how close are you to having to introduce relativistic effects?
So the system we have, the short pulse system we have is only 150 millijoules and 35 femtoseconds, and there's a potential upgrade path where we'll have 500 joules, and once we get those amplifiers, we could get very intense pulses. But that costs a lot of money. And if I can stop that, I would. I mean, because there's too many. I think studying the material aspects and the warm dense matter aspects is much more interesting for this particular system. I'm not sure what the LCLS would bring to the, unless you were going to probe at the interaction point. So, wait, we have aroused a question. Is that a sleeping question there?
Yes. Would it be possible to do a warm dense matter experiment starting from pre-compressed samples, or would the diamond anvil cell and something like on the gasket get in the way?
Yeah. Okay. So there's the diamond anvil cells get you to a few EV before the diamond anvil cells disappear, and it's a very expensive way to blow apart targets. So the answer is yes, that could be done, but you need a benefactor to do it. And if you want to donate the money for that,
no, I don't.
We're really happy to take your money. So I think the only reason we wouldn't do it is because of expense. Okay, is that? Oh, that raises another question.
I was just wondering, the last things you mentioned about fluctuating plasma fields and so on, measuring that. Are these fields fundamentally different from what you would get in ultra-cold plasma?
Ultra-cold?
Ultra-cold, yeah.
No.
No.
No, they basically are.
It's just different time scales.
Stochastic processes.
Yeah, exactly.
And there are, you know, collective effects that will occur, of course, but they're not, those are amplified, shall we say, in the ultra-cold plasmas. But these things are just normal plasmon modes, ion electron modes.
So that might make it much cheaper to study ultra-cold plasmas than for that, no?
Except that I can observe the line shapes of these things, and the line shapes are inherently important. The diagnostics, they're free. You know, you do something like this and you see these line shapes coming out. There become questions of importance about the line wings and where they're formed, and especially in astrophysical observations. So the thing is, people want to know about these fluctuation rates.
The lunch will be served in about 5 minutes in the courtyard.
I was really interested. So when do I turn this off?
No. They told me the way they turned in the office is just rip it open and take out that.
It's a different concept. So how have you been?
Hello.
You're good. Okay, Lizzie passed away. Yeah, she was sick for many years, 13 years, cancer. And so she passed away in January, very, very long years. Myelosarcoma, soft tissue cancer in her pelvic region, which isolated it from getting anything.